Boy, the fans are into it here as well. Roslovic on the near side now for Connor with speed down the left wing side. Cuts in toward the middle. He drops it now for Roslovic. Back for Connor's shot. He scores! Kyle Connor will hit number 30 on the season with an overtime winner. And the Jets win it 5-4 here in Montreal tonight. How about that for Kyle Connor?
30 goals on the year for Kyle Connor. 50 wins on the season for the Winnipeg Jets. They finish the final road trip of the regular season with a 3-1 record. They sweep their way through Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Pleased to be joined in studio by Sean Assor. Ezra Ginsberg away from the show this week. Presumably he's in Montreal in a smoked meat coma, is my understanding, as he having gone to both the Ottawa and Montreal games on this road trip. Sean, good evening. Nice of you to join me on this Wednesday night.
Also in a meat coma, but still here.
Oh, there you go. Not a smoked meat coma, but just have an excessive amount of
meat coma,
red meat in your diet, and good luck with that gout when it pops up sooner rather than later.
That's a problem for future, Sean.
Yes, right, I know. You're still a little young. You still got a couple years before you have to worry about dietary restrictions and things along those lines. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. It's the best way to reach us here in studio. You have something nice to say. You have something mean to say. That's the way spot to say it. If it's good enough, I might even read it on air. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. Sean, it was sort of a unique road trip for the Winnipeg Jets in that didn't have a ton to play for on these games, given they clinched the playoff spot, you know, prior to heading out on the road. But after the disappointing effort last Thursday night in Chicago, you can't be upset about the way they performed, especially Saturday night in Toronto, where they had their regular lineup for the most part, beating a very good Toronto Maple Leafs team, and then Monday and Tuesday sweeping through Ottawa and Montreal with a depleted lineup because they're sitting some guys to try and get them rested, get them healthy, and of course the Senators and the Habs, who both have they've had tough seasons in both of those places as well.
Yeah, and you talked about a depleted lineup. I mean, just look at who was out yesterday versus the Canadiens. Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Adam Lowry, Josh Morrissey, and Jacob Trouba, and Connor Hellebuyck.
Only basically the core of your roster.
Pretty much everyone who paid to see the Jets, or the attendance paid for to see. But a real, real fun game yesterday specifically. I mean, talk about Sammy Niku's first NHL game. Credit to the Jets once again, setting up one of their first-time players to play in a memorable game. We saw it with Jack Roslovic and Eric Comrie in Columbus. Of course, Roslovic, a Columbus native.
Mm-hmm.
And then yesterday at the Heralded Bell Center for Sammy Niku, I mean, a real special game for a player who looks like he's far exceeded already a seventh-round expectation.
Absolutely. For one shot on goal, one goal in the NHL, not bad shooting percentage numbers. And, I mean, you can't really take a ton out of the game, but he looked, he came as advertised.
Mm-hmm.
He came as a guy who can skate. We certainly saw that. We saw that again during the 3-on-3 overtime when he had that dangerous rush. Of course, it's 3-on-3. He can skate. He can move the puck. You know, he's got shortcomings in his own zone, but that's, again, no surprise and just something that a young player is going to have to work their way through. But everything is pointed upwards in terms of the trajectory of Sammy Niku. And Dave Manouk, you know, of IllegalCurve.com and, of course, of the Saturday show, has seen Sammy Niku probably as much or more than anybody in the entire city, given how many times he's seen the Manitoba Moose live in a person. And he said this is what you expect from Sammy Niku. He's got some defensive shortcomings. That's going to come with age. That's going to come with more games. That's going to come with learning how to be a NHL caliber defenseman, you know, but he's got such upside that there's no reason to think that this guy is not going to be a regular member of the Winnipeg Jets. I don't know if it's next year. I don't know if it's a year and a half from now, but he's certainly got, pardon me as I choke here, he's certainly got all of the tremendous upside potential that you want to see.
Yeah, you know, nothing that a little experience won't help, but he's got to clean up a little bit in his own zone. And that just comes with learning defensive reads and being more comfortable in your own zone. He's got to put on at least, I'd say, 15 pounds so that he can handle the rigors mm-hmm. of a much, much more physical team than anyone else expected than the Montreal Canadiens, who I assume maybe that's why another reason he was in that lineup, not a very physical no. West Coast style
there weren't
crashing
any. There was
bang.
No hitting in that game. Yeah. And there's a little bit of, there was a, you know, Kirby Reichel caught Brandon Tanev up high with a, well, what I'll call
a, high
a,
stick.
A bad hit. You know, got him up in the mush that Tanev responded to, and there was a little bit of a scrum there with Tyler Myers, but that was not a physical game. You didn't expect that mm-hmm. to be a physical game. You didn't expect the game against Ottawa to be a physical game, which is, you know, exactly what the Jets want at this point in time. They don't, you know, they've got their 50 wins. Mathematically, they can still catch Nashville. That requires them to win out. Mm-hmm. And that requires Nashville to lose out in regulation. I mean, we saw how close Nashville came mm-hmm. to clinching the division last night, and we'll talk about that yeah. later on
Carrie
in the
Underwood
program.
Is not happy.
Carrie Underwood, not happy. Fix this, NHL.
Yeah, and harsh emoji.
Yeah, Carrie, you don't want Carrie on your bad side. She's documented that in some of her music before. But, yeah. you know, the, nice. The Jets are... You know, coming home for these next two games, they have Calgary tomorrow night, Chicago on Saturday, and that's, again, the same thing you want. You want these games to be unscathed. You don't want to see anything remotely close to an injury like you saw with Brandon Tanev taking that shot and Tyler Myers in Ottawa taking that shot on the side of the knee. You want health first and foremost after these games. Along those lines, Sean, do you expect to see a full lineup tomorrow and Saturday, or do you think that Paul Maurice might elect to rest maybe some different veterans tomorrow night? Maybe guys like Brian Little and Matthew Perreault get a night off where and Scheifele and Wheeler return or whatever it might be, something like that. Steve Mason, could you see him back in the net mm-hmm. again tomorrow and then maybe save everybody, get everybody healthy for Saturday?
I could definitely see a few vets switching up, like maybe a Brian Little. I don't know if you want to take Matthew Perreault out. I think you want to get that guy as many touches as he can. He's, you know, he scored against the Senators, mm-hmm. busted that well-known slump that we've been talking about for, seems like, forever.
19 games.
Maybe this is a guy you leave in. He seems relatively healthy. He seems like he's moving really well. Just a guy, maybe you want him to get as many as he, maybe a couple more goals entering the playoffs, you know. But, yeah, I could see maybe Brian Little, a guy who wasn't taking faceoffs close to a month ago, nagging maybe an upper body injury or two, but... I can definitely and Hellebuck. I can see Hellebuck said he wants the last two games. So,
yeah.
Do you put him in? You for sure. Everyone is in Chicago for all systems a go versus Chicago. Disagree?
No, I would agree with that. The reason, I mean, if you remember back to 2015, that last home game, which was mm-hmm. a Saturday afternoon game against the Calgary Flames, the Jets basically rested all of their main mm-hmm. players for that game, but that's only because they had clinched in Game 81.
And it was such a dogfight to get in
right.
at that
it
time.
It took until Game 81, if you recall, they lost in a shootout in Denver that game, and Edmonton beat LA at home, mm-hmm. and that's what clinched mm-hmm. the Jets in Game 81, so everybody took Game 82 off. Now that you've clinched at game, you know, 76, 77, whatever the exact number is, you know, I personally would err on the side of caution. I'd give Hellebuck another game off. Mm-hmm. That way you give him off from Monday.
Let Mason play a couple.
I'd let Mason go again.
I thought yesterday was a big game for Steve Mason.
You want him to feel the puck. Mm-hmm. And
he was busy.
He was busy. He wasn't great last night, but that's to be expected after having that much rust on him. Mm-hmm. So I'd want him to feel the puck again. I'd give Mason tomorrow's game. I'd give Hellebuck another game off. And I know why Hellebuck wants it. He's a competitive guy. He never likes to sit out a game. He's so close to getting that record for most wins in a regular season by an American goaltender.
He's, you know, what, two?
I think he's one behind Tom Barrasso. Yeah. Or did he just tie Tom Barrasso?
I think he tied Richter. Was that?
He tied Richter. And
he's about one behind Barrasso?
I think that's what it is. I'd have to double check, but it's certainly right up there at the top of the record there. So I get why he'd want them, but I don't know, something is very appealing to me about getting Hellebuck off from, you know, he played Monday night, mm-hmm. but then you give him Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday off, and then he comes back Saturday to against the Blackhawks. That to me makes a lot of sense. I mean, I guess mm-hmm. it's really coach's prerogative in discussion with the player and in discussion with the position coaches to really figure out the best game plan going forward. Maybe he plays tomorrow and you give him Saturday off. And then
I think he plays Saturday. I think he's in Saturday regardless.
Well, you know, it could go either way. You could maybe play your regular lineup tomorrow against Chicago, and then you give everybody off. Then you got Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and then, of course, the series probably either starts Wednesday or Thursday of next week. I mean, you're going to have a decent chunk of time off, just a matter of how much time is maybe too much time. But that being said, it usually takes – every team's going to have that same amount of time off. Minnesota is going to rest guys because they're close to clinching third place. Mm-hmm. And so then everybody's going to have 4 or 5 days off. And usually, as we've seen, it takes about maybe 5 to 7 minutes in that first game back to get everybody back clicking. It usually, the hangover doesn't usually last much longer than that. But it'll be interesting to see what Paul Maurice decides to do. I mean, does he give guys like, you know, Brandon Tanev, does he get a game off given how, you know, how hard he plays?
And how hard he's probably going to be playing in the playoffs.
Andrew Kopp, does he's played 80 games this year. He hasn't missed a game. Does Laine get a game off? I mean, I know that I know the Rocket Richard and everything else, but I mean, there's a bigger goal at stake here.
Of course.
So I guess it's...
Maybe Paul Stastny, a guy who had some sort of lingering issues maybe prior a couple weeks ago, but we haven't even talked about Kyle Connor reaching 30 goals.
Well, I mean, probably the most unheralded 30-goal scorer in the NHL this season. I mean, he's had a fantastic season.
Unbelievable.
What's most impressive to me is the transition that we've seen from Kyle Connor going from a, I mean, passenger is not the right word.
Sure,
but
it could
to some extent, a passenger on that first line, you know, up until, let's say, game 45, game 50, and then sort of, you saw with Mark Scheifele in his rookie year, and you saw with Nikolaj Ehlers in his rookie year, something just clicks after about 50 games, the number of repetitions and the number of, you know, the muscle memory that eventually kicks
and
in.
Just the confidence of that you belong.
Absolutely. And then you become a driver. And so now you have a first line that's got three drivers on it. In Scheifele, Wheeler, and Connor, and that, you know, can't overstate how important that's going to be when one of those guys isn't going at 100% every single game.
The depth just continues to impress on this lineup, especially at the age at which it's producing. Listen to the age of the goal scorers from yesterday's game. 19, Laine. 22, Ehlers. 21, Roslovic. 21, Niku. 21, Connor. Yeah. The youth is here.
Yeah.
It's here.
It's remarkable, the drafting and developing, and I know it became a cliche to the point of it being humorous, but it's paid off.
How about this 2015 draft?
It's incredible. I mean, everybody, you know, people I have conversations with on the street, everybody talks about the 2015 draft as, well, it certainly changed the face of the franchise, it changed the shape of the franchise, when you can churn talented players of this ilk through your roster, and they're not dregs on your roster, they're starters and drivers, and that doesn't even include guys like Mason Appleton, who are still doing their thing, and Tucker Poolman, who's just coming into his own. I mean, the 2015 draft is going, it could very well look back in the NHL, not just in the Winnipeg Jets, but the NHL can look back at the Jets 2015 draft and say that's a seismic shift for a franchise, being able to procure that amount of talent in one draft year.
And using Eric Foley, the third rounder from that draft, to acquire Paul Stastny, who also had an impact on yesterday's game, setting up Nikolaj Ehlers. So just, you go on and on about this draft and what it's been able to do for this franchise. It's remarkable.
Yeah, it absolutely is remarkable. And it's only going to continue once the regular season comes to an end on Saturday and the playoffs begin next week. When we return, we're going to talk about a crucial injury to the Jets' most likely first-round opponent, that's being the Minnesota Wild, and that, of course, the injury to Ryan Suter. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL This Week. We are live here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. As I mentioned before the break, Minnesota Wild suffer a crucial injury, just an absolute killer injury. Ryan Suter, their all-world defenseman, fractures his right ankle. He's out for the season. Ryan Suter, we have the audio now? Okay, so here's some of the reaction. I believe this is Zach Parise talking about the impact of Ryan Suter's injury on the Wild.
Tough one for us. I don't think I need to explain. We all understand how important he is for our team, and I don't know what the final. Yeah, I don't know what the diagnosis is, but hopefully it's not not too bad. But you know, you don't like to see when your teammates or anybody, for that matter, go down like that.
That's Zach Parise talking about Ryan Suter. Obviously, before the announcement of the official injury, that being the fractured right ankle, he's going to have surgery tomorrow, is what I understand. This is a guy, Sean, that averaged 26 minutes and 47 seconds of ice time for the Minnesota Wild. He's having a career year offensively. He's up to 51 points, 45 assists, 6 goals. Plays in all situations for the Minnesota Wild. 5-on-5, he's a machine. Power play, penalty kill. I mean, there's a reason why he signed that absolutely massive contract with the Wild back in 2012, that 13-year, $98 million contract, when that was something you could sign. This is a killer injury for the Wild. Does this injury prevent them from realistically being a first-round upset potential?
Yeah, it has to. I mean, you just look at all the intangibles this guy brings. I was just listening, you know, you're naming him off. Power play. He's a point producer on the power play. Half of those assists came with the man advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So he can put up numbers on the power play. He's a tremendous shutdown defenseman against the opposition's top line. We've seen that here in Winnipeg over the last few seasons. Anytime the Jets, you know, prior to this year when depth wasn't as evident,
yeah,
you would see Ryan Suter shutting down the Jets' top offensive line. That is, he would be their Shea Weber when to Nashville, you know? He'd be mm-hmm. the guy. And just with the amount of minutes he logs, you talked about 26, just over 26. The guy plays up to 30 minutes some nights, and he plays mean, and he plays rugged, and he's tough to play against. And you go into the corner with Ryan Suter, and you're getting a bump or a slash.
Yeah.
You're not coming out unscathed.
He's a stud number one defenseman.
And it's funny when you listen. I listened to all the Wild's reaction somewhat to the concern of how long he was going to be out for. And they're almost shocked that he's out for an extended period of time just because of how durable he's been over his extended NHL career. This guy doesn't miss many games.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see him go down the way he did, that looked ugly.
Yeah, you could tell immediately. Was something significantly wrong. I mean, you look back, he missed 5 games in 2014-15. And other than that, 82. That was the 77 mm-hmm. that he missed those 5 games. 82, 48 in the lockout year. 79, 70, 82, 82. He's one of those guys you just pencil into your lineup. 82 games a year for the most part at 25 minutes mm-hmm. of time on ice per game. And without him, I mean, the Minnesota Wild defense is vulnerable, to put it mildly. I mean, Jonas Brodin's a good defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Dumba, the two of them make a very nice pairing.
Mm-hmm.
Jared Spurgeon, who's also been a terrific defenseman for the Wild this season, he's been out of the lineup. He's missed the last 9 games, if I'm not mistaken.
Skating again, but yes. Recovering from a torn hamstring. So, I mean,
hard to believe he's going to be. I mean, the expectation is that he's going to return to the Wild lineup on Saturday night as they wrap up their regular season in San Jose. And, you know, that'll certainly be a boost to the defense. But it's hard to believe that Jared Spurgeon is going to be anywhere near 100%. And then you look, once you get through the top two or the top three there, boy, oh boy. I mean, you got guys like Nick Seeler, Ryan Murphy, who is a cast-off
mm-hmm.
from the Carolina Hurricanes organization, Carson Soucy, Nate Prosser. I mean, this is not a defense that's built for success, and that's why the Ryan Suter injury, and I don't want to discount the chances of the Minnesota Wild, because when you have a goaltender like Devan Dubnyk, who's a very good goaltender, and can certainly get hot and can steal you a game,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to believe that with this defense, he can steal you more than one, maybe two games. And the Jets, we've seen what they've been able to do against teams with some good defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
Cycle, cycle, cycle. When the Jets are able to get matchups on home ice against these bottom pairing or bottom, you know, three defensemen mm-hmm. for the Wild, it's going to be real difficult for Bruce Boudreau and his club to match up.
Yeah, I'm glad you talked about Devan Dubnyk, because here's a guy who's going to be tested. With Ryan Suter out of the lineup and this decor now, a lot of pressure, going to be on Matt Dumba and Jonas Brodin, like we talked about. Matt Dumba, sometimes a little bit careless with the puck. We've seen that a few times. Nikolaj Ehlers has buried a couple courtesy of Matt Dumba. But But sorry, the name is completely dry. Devin Dubnyk, pardon me, is he's got a workload ahead of him for sure, and those forwards are going to have to support their defense tremendously in the playoffs if they're going to want to upset whoever they take on in the first round.
Yeah, it's going to be a very difficult situation for the Minnesota Wild, and of course, you know, as there's granted, they still could get caught by the St. Louis Blues. Mm-hmm. And hard to believe it's going to happen. It's hard to believe that's not going to be the Wild and the Jets in the first round of the playoffs. Stranger things have happened, but it's hard to believe it's not going to be that. And it's just what became it's just not a good matchup for the Wild right now, given how deep the Jets are, especially at, you know, they can go, you know, three forward lines deep in terms of scoring lines, not to take anything away from the fourth line, which has certainly been a catalyst of offense as of late.
Who is also a scoring line,
yeah,
apparently.
Or, you know, with the way that Brandon Tanev and Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry have been playing, you can't discount their offensive capabilities. Mm-hmm. And it's just not, right now, it's a difficult matchup for the Wild without Ryan Suter. I mean, take the number one defenseman off basically any team. Take Drew Doughty off the Los Angeles Kings. What does that do to them? Mm-hmm. Take, you know, I mean, Nashville's probably not a good example because they have six number one defensemen.
Maybe Eric Carlson.
Eric Carlson out of Ottawa. I mean, it's just a bad situation right now for the Minnesota Wild. It'll be interesting to see how Bruce Boudreau handles that, mm-hmm. and how he tries to get matchups when the playoffs actually begin next week, next Wednesday, next Thursday for the Jets' first round series. We're not yet sure specifically which day. They're not the only Western Conference playoff team, potential playoff team, to suffer serious injuries this week. The injury bug bit the Anaheim Ducks and bit them hard as well. Mm-hmm. Cam Fowler is out 2 to 6 weeks with a shoulder injury. That's certainly going to take him out for the first round of the playoffs. Unlikely to see him for the first round. And goaltender John Gibson is suffered an upper body injury in that same game against the Colorado Avalanche, a game the Ducks actually came back from being down, I believe, 3-0, came back to take two points against the Avs in overtime. John Gibson out of the Ducks lineup day-to-day with an upper body injury. They at least have certainly more than a serviceable backup there in Ryan Miller, but the loss of Cam Fowler is a huge one. As we saw the Anaheim Ducks here in Winnipeg not that long ago, their defense wasn't terrific, mm-hmm. and that's with Fowler in their lineup. Take Fowler out, now that defense is going to have a lot of trouble moving that puck, I think, and it's going to make them a much more favorable first-round opponent for either the Vegas Golden Knights or the Nashville Predators. It could conceivably still be the San Jose Sharks, as they could get the third spot in the Pacific Division still.
Yeah, you feel for John Gibson, hey? This guy is just showing that he's a gamer. He can play. He's a solid goaltender in the NHL, and just, he cannot stay healthy. The way he was injured, it's the flukiest of flukes. I mean, Gabe Landeskog gets shoved from behind by Ryan Kessler into him, and all of a sudden he's down, and you're thinking, not again. This can't be happening to this guy, this poor guy.
Well, you remember it happened last year in Game 7,
yes,
against the Predators. He wasn't able to go. Jonathan Bernier came in and played goal for the Ducks, and, well, he was horrendous. if you recall that Game 7, he couldn't stop anything. But at least the Ducks, there has to be a fair bit of comfort in that you have Ryan Miller there, who's certainly been through all the battles in the NHL and has actually had a pretty good season as the ostensibly backup goaltender in Anaheim.
Yeah, having a great season. 251 goals against, a .925 save percentage, just a little bit better than his career numbers. So he's playing well, and he's providing the support necessary, especially when you have an injury-prone starting goaltender. Just back to Cam Fowler. I mean, out 2 to 6 weeks with a shoulder injury. As a defenseman, as a top-pairing defenseman who logs a bunch of minutes, that's the last thing you want to hear about a nagging shoulder injury going into the playoffs, a guy who's going to take so many hits along the wall retrieving the puck. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the last thing you want to ailing you going into the postseason. But Fowler was out last season in the playoffs versus Calgary, pardon me, and the Ducks won that first round. So they've been to the playoffs without him before.
Yeah, they have been.
And they know what kind of they'll have to do. And we talked about similarly in Minnesota, more responsibility on the forwards to just shore up the defensive responsibility. Mm-hmm. But I mean, your starting goaltender and your number one D-man, not good.
No, and he played just under 25 minutes a game, Fowler does, 24-51. But they can spread that out. They'll give Hampus Lindholm a few more minutes.
He'll be worked.
I mean, Sammy Vatanen is no longer on the team, so you wonder now that trade I mean, I know what why they did it. They acquire Adam Henrique. They go deep up the middle. But now all of a sudden your defense is a lot thinner without Fowler and without Vatanen. So you're going to rely heavily on Lindholm, Hampus Lindholm, Brandon Montour, and Josh Manson. You got an aging Kevin Bieksa whenever he gets back into the lineup for the Ducks. So and then sort of similar to the Minnesota Wild, their bottom three defensemen, Marcus Pedersen, Andy Walensky. These aren't guys that these aren't household names by any stretch, and you're not really sure these are guys that you want to rely on. Francois Beauchemin certainly getting up there in age. You wonder if the Ducks are going to have the necessary defensive depth to be able to sustain a run maybe beyond the first round in the Western Conference playoffs.
Right, and then what do we talk? What have we been talking about with the Ducks all season long? Depth at center.
Mm-hmm.
So you got four very reliable centermen now. If they can stay healthy, that's a pretty good way to shore up on the defensive
side.
Got to
get the puck to them, though.
Yep.
If you can't get the puck to them, and that's what we saw in that game where the Jets dominated them here, the Ducks couldn't get it out of their own zone. And
was glorious.
Well, I mean, it was dominant, and it was one-sided, and you wonder if the Ducks are going to face the same problem of not being able to move the puck out of their own zone, especially now when you factor in the loss of Cam Fowler. When we come back, we're going to be joined by George Johnson. He covers the Calgary Flames. The Flames are in town tomorrow to play the Jets, the final meeting between these two teams this season. And we'll talk to George about the disappointing end to the Calgary Flames season. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Wednesday edition of Illegal Curve Radio. We're live here on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell, Sean Assor with you in studio, working on getting George Johnson on the line. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got all the big screen TVs. They got the great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, George Johnson. He covers the Calgary Flames. George, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
For you guys, anything.
I always appreciate you saying that, George. Obviously,
there you go.
obviously brought you on to talk about the Flames. They make their final visit here to Winnipeg tomorrow night. Disappointing, I think, would probably be an understatement to describe the Flames season, especially a season that was really going pretty well right up until the Flames had their bye week. And then from there on, it sort of has been a bit of a tailspin. What went wrong for the Flames in sort of the latter half of the season, George?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right about, I mean, I've been covering this team since time immemorial, and, you know, they've been years when they've been out at Valentine's Day, and there have been years when they've fought right till the bitter end and not made it. But this time it was almost kind of like, you know, they stepped off into an open elevator shaft. And it's just kind of inexplicable. What went wrong? Well, what went right? But, you know, the goal scoring just absolutely dried up. I mean, if you look at it, you know, right now, Michael Frölén's got 1 in 24. Michael Frölén's got 0 in 15. Jankowski's got 2 in 17. You know, it's sort of gone that way. Injuries haven't helped, but that's not an excuse. They've really struggled at home. Their power play's 28th in the league. You know, and they lost guys at key times. Mike Smith was going well, and he hasn't been quite the same guy since he came back. They've shut down Christopher Stieg. They've shut down Sean Monahan. They've shut down TJ Brody. Travis Hamonic may be back tomorrow. We're not quite sure, but he did skate with the team today, and he was on the plane. So that's an indication he may play tomorrow, which will help them. But it's really been a combination of things, and it's been a new one on me, and I've been around a while.
George, I'm glad you mentioned Chris Versteeg, a guy who, I mean, he's not the most household name around the league, but a guy who I believe the Flames just really missed his, especially offensive presence this year, especially on the power play.
Yeah, he's you know, on the power play, and the power play struggled mightily all year when Chris was there. But, you know, he really has been, you know, a real sort of underrated find for them these last 2 years. I mean, he's an old school guy. He's great to, for us to talk to, but he passes the puck on the power play about as well as anybody has on this team since Alex Tanguay, you know, from that kind of a position. And they certainly have missed him a lot. You know, he missed 48 games after hip surgery, and then came back, tried it, stayed, hung around for two or three, and then found it just wasn't going to work and was ruled out for the rest of the season. But, you know, he's one of the little lesser known guys, maybe less publicized injuries that they've had that really hurt, but his presence has, his absence, sorry, has been felt, no question.
George Johnson is our guest on NHL This Week. George covers the Calgary Flames. George, on Saturday night, the Flames and the Oilers, you know, it was a battle of futility, but it actually was an emotional battle of futility that at one point in time saw Milan Lucic and Mike Smith sort of exchanging punches before Tanner Glass, a guy, of course, familiar to Jets fans here in Winnipeg, stepped in and took on Milan Lucic. After the game, Mike Smith sort of was frustrated and said that it spoke to a leadership and character flaw with the Flames in that it was only Tanner Glass who stepped in to defend him. You know, how did those comments from Mike Smith go over in the dressing room, and how much truth is that? And is that symptomatic of a more serious leadership void with Calgary?
I don't think it's more symptomatic of a leadership void. I mean, I think Mike's a really competitive guy. There's no question about that. And the fact that Tanner Glass stepped up and fought the Oilers' big dinosaur was certainly kudos to him, because as he said the next day, he said, it's not like anybody wants to go fight Milan Lucic. You know, I mean, that's just not the way it is. I think Mike Smith was speaking out of frustration, and I think maybe that incident, to me anyway, that incident sort of was a tipping point where, you know, a lot of the demons and like the clasp on Pandora's box was opened up, and it was kind of like, yeah, I'm really frustrated, and here's why I'm frustrated, and away we go. So I don't think it is. I mean, I think in Mark Giordano they have a great leader, but he's not going to step up and fight anybody. That's not what he does. Maybe what it does mean is when you've got a guy like Lucic in the division, that you have to have someone of his weight class and reputation in your lineup too for those games. You know, we talk about fighting being out of the game and this and that and the other thing, but for this old weary old scribbler, that game, because of the emotional intensity in it, kind of, I was dabbing at my eyes, moistened eyes with nostalgia, you know, for those crazy old games where if the deadline hadn't been 12:30, we never would have had a score in, kind of thing. So, you know, I don't know about that, but it may be something that the Calgary Flames want to address next year to get bigger and to get tougher, especially, you know, in a big, tough division. When you look at San Jose, you look at L.A., so that may be something that they'd be looking at in the offseason. I'm sure they'll be looking at a lot of things.
George, just reading the coverage around the Flames, especially recently, a lot of talk about a mentality within the dressing room of guys not hating to lose as much as they need to. And, you know, Brad Treliving came out and said, this team needs to be more engaged emotionally. I mean, that's got to rub a guy like Mark Giordano the wrong way. Just a guy that, you know, when undrafted, has worked his butt off tooth and nail to get where he is in the NHL today.
Yeah, and I think that we, over the last, you know, couple of two or three weeks here where, you know, the rug has kind of come out from underneath him. They've outshot a lot of teams, but the conviction that it was going to get done, you know what I mean? That seemed to be, to me, lacking. It seemed to be everything kind of snowballed together, and they just couldn't rouse themselves to get it done. And, that's questions for management and where they want to go and what direction they want to head in the off season.
George Johnson, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Calgary Flames. They're in town tomorrow night, make their final visit to Winnipeg of this 2017-18 season. George, we know the Flames added Travis Hamonic in the offseason, and the conversation really before the season was just how good is this Flames defense? You know, is this one of the top five defenses in the entire NHL? Yet, if you look at the Flames, they're in the bottom half of the league in terms of goals against. What went wrong on the defensive side of the game this season?
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, Dougie Hamilton had a great offensive year. He's leading all defensemen in goals. But, I mean, when we looked at that top four and after they made the Hamonic deal, everybody said, man, you know, that's a top four to end all top fours. And he was the guy who was supposed to come in and sort of magically reimagine T.J. Brody, who had struggled last year. I mean, great skater, great offensive player. Had a bad year last year, admittedly, by his own admission. And this guy, putting Hamonic, it seemed to be ideal, a guy with a little bit of edge, with the guy with the offensive upside. And it took them an awful long time to sort of coexist together. I don't think either one of them would deny that. I mean, the bonding period went a lot longer than it should have. And I think that was part of the problem. And just when they started to get things all sorted out, Brody got hurt and, you know, has been out for quite a while now. And so they really never sort of got on the same page, and they never melded the way that, say, you know, Giordano and Hamilton have. But it seems to be that whenever anybody's struggling, they stick them with Giordano and they're better. That's just kind of the way the world works in Calgary.
George, I mean, a lot of talk going on around the league right now about the Sedin twins and their retirement. Mm-hmm. I mean, being in the Pacific Division with Vancouver, anything stand out to you, or can you share a memory on your favorite Sedin moment?
Oh, I mean, good Lord. I mean, holy geez, they made you dizzy. And it was kind of like you were sitting there and you always felt really sorry for the third guy on the line because it was almost like he'd vanished, you know, into the netherworld because they were just throwing it around so well together. But, you know, we're talking to Glenn Gullitson, who coached them, guys that played with them, you know, like Tanner Glass played with them, obviously, in Vancouver, and what they meant to other Swedish players like Michael Backlund the day that they retired. You know, the thing that Tanner said that was, you know, kind of telling, I think, was that, you know, you walk into that room and you're just some guy coming up, and they treated you like, you know, you were a 10-year veteran. And I think we'll miss them because they made even mundane nights sparkle from time to time. They had that magic where, you know, you're caught watching them. I mean, defensemen were caught watching them, so crazy old sports writers were certainly caught watching them too.
Well said. George Johnson covers the Calgary Flames, speaking about his memories of the Sedins, who announced their retirement earlier this week. George, always appreciate your time. We'll see you at the rink tomorrow. Have a great stay in Winnipeg in the meantime.
Yeah, it's always a great stay in Winnipeg. You guys know that.
Attaboy, George. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. When we come back, we'll talk about the Sedins and their retirement, that announcement that they're going to hang it up at season's end. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
They did this for the fans. They did it for the families who are in. They did it for so everybody can have one long goodbye. And more importantly, on another level, yeah, we know they can still play. They told me that last week. They told you that last week. So they have that comfort in their own mind that they're going out knowing they could still play. What do? They put the team in a situation where, yeah, they have to recoup 100 points, but they freed up $14 million in cap space to maybe go after a free agent, take care of the business they have to take care of internally with contract extensions, especially Brock Besser. And once again, it's when I left the building yesterday, I just came away going, typical guys, they think of everybody else except themselves.
That's Ben Kuzma of Post Media in Vancouver. He's covered the Sedins for a whole bunch of years in their career, been a good friend of the program. He was appearing on TSN 1040, our sister station in Vancouver, to talk about the retirement announcement of Henrik and Daniel Sedin. They published a letter on the Canucks website earlier this week saying they're going to hang it up after Saturday night's game in Edmonton. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The Sedins, they announced their retirement, Sean. They are sort of the prototypical athlete that you would want your child to emulate if you had to pick one. You always hear athletes shouldn't be role models. These guys were role models and continue to be role models in how they conducted themselves in oftentimes trying circumstances in Vancouver.
Have you heard a negative story yet? I mean, the accolades and the mentions and the memories just continue to flood the internet and the airwaves, and I have not heard a single negative thing about these guys. They are the epitome of class. If you, like you were talking about, Drew, if you had a kid and you wanted to mold them after an athlete, you would do so on and off the ice, like the Sedins. Generous guys, respectful to the media. Talk to some of the media guys. No one would ever cower in fear of having to interview the Sedins for the fear of getting your head or face ripped off by a silly question or whatnot. You know, there's tons of stories just about their availability in after big games and big losses in the playoffs and them just waiting around for technical malfunctions. Just classy, classy individuals. And then you put them on the ice. Mm-hmm. And for over a decade, they produced some very exciting hockey.
Yeah.
Two guys that mastered the art of the cycle and showed some of the most disgusting no-look passes you could ever imagine.
Twin symmetry. Just the you hear about it and you know how one twin knows where the other one is, and you got to see it almost in action when you watched Henrik and Daniel Sedin play with one another. And you know, Ben Kuzma mentioned in the clip, these aren't guys who are going out after 20-point seasons, 25-point seasons. These guys, you know, they can certainly still play in the NHL. Henrik with 48 points this year, only 3 goals, mind you, but 45 assists. He's a playmaker of playmakers. Oh, yeah. Daniel Sedin, always more of the goal scorer. Mm-hmm. He's got 53 points this year. I mean, these are guys who could easily go and chase a cup. It's not going to happen in Vancouver, obviously, mm-hmm. but they started their NHL career in Vancouver, and it was important to them to finish their career with the one franchise that they've ever called home in North America, that being the Canucks. I mean, if you're the Sedins, there's so many different opportunities. Think about the different controversies that they've gone through in Vancouver. I mean, there was the Todd Bertuzzi debacle. You know, also many years ago against Steve Moore, they were there for that.
I was watching that game live. That was insane.
It was completely insane. Absolutely insane. One of the most vicious on-ice incidences we've ever seen.
Yeah.
The Sedins were there and managed to keep their class throughout all of it. The Stanley Cup Game 7 defeat and subsequent riot managed to keep their class through all of it. The Corey Schneider, Roberto Luongo fiasco.
The Tortorella splitting them up, making them block shots. Remember
John Tortorella's 1 year reign of terror in Vancouver? I mean, it was almost controversy after controversy, way more controversy than success. But through it all, the Sedins were a picture of stoicism and a picture of class. And I think that truly is, to your point, Sean, that you haven't heard anything negative about them, is why they're going to be remembered so fondly when they officially hang it up after Saturday night's road game in Edmonton. And doesn't that just say everything about them, that they could have gone out tomorrow night? That could be their last game. It could have been their last game, their last home game. It's going to be their last home game. Mm-hmm. But they said, no, we're going to go make the pointless trip to Edmonton on Saturday night. We're going to play for our teammates. and hopefully an adoring crowd in Edmonton does the right thing and gives them a significant ovation.
Well, they're insulting Connor McDavid in Edmonton, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, all bets are off on everything going Edmonton related. Yeah. You're absolutely right there. But I mean, you saw it last night. You saw the respect after they lost on home ice in a shootout to the Vancouver Canucks. Pardon me, to the Vegas Golden Knights. What happened after the shootout? What happened after the game was over? Every member of the Vegas Golden Knights shook hands, stood in a line to shake hands with them on the ice to pay their respects to guys who've had significant and lengthy 17 years, never mind the strike season, 17 years of NHL hockey starting in 2000-2001. They were tremendous ambassadors for the game, and the Canucks organization, they were the classiest part of the Canucks organization for a lot of years there, while the Canucks were being run by buffoons and incompetence more than anything else.
Something that just stands out to me so immensely, they were drafted. It's such a unique story. Brian Burke trades up so that he can get both of them.
Yeah. Well, Brian Burke's interview with Hustler and Rick this afternoon was fantastic.
Fantastic. If you can, check it out on the podcast. Yeah. Phenomenal. But Daniel drafted second. Henrik drafted third. Both of them combined, career, 2,106 points. Every other first rounder from that draft, 2,468 points. So they are offensive machines, these
combined,
guys.
They're about 300 points behind every other first-round pick in that draft.
Like, think about that for a second.
I mean, it says it was a terrible first-round draft, and you heard Berkey talking about it because first overall was Patrick Steffen, and we know what happened with his career, and then fourth overall was Pavel Brendl, and we know what happened with his career. Yeah. Exactly. Didn't go anywhere. That being said, I mean, fantastic careers. All the respect in the world I have for the Sedins. I don't know if they're Hall of Famers.
I think they are.
Okay, give me your argument.
It's just such a unique story. Two twins that have played the entire careers together, both on the same team and on the same line. Just the way that they were able to perform on the ice, the things they were able to do, especially in the corners. In the clutching and grabbing era, the way, you know, they really set a tone for just the way that the cycle game has evolved, and off ice, all of their amazing attributes, their involvement in the community, the class act that they are. I just feel that if you're going to put anyone into the Hall of Fame that hasn't won a Stanley Cup, it's these guys.
You know, and the part that they haven't won a Stanley Cup doesn't even bother me, because there's a lot of good players who haven't won a Stanley Cup, and they got as close as you can get going all the way down to Game 7. I mean, I think they're going to get in. Let me preface that by saying I think they're going to get in, because the NHL Hockey Hall of Fame, or not the NHL Hockey Hall of Fame, the Hockey Hall of Fame is, in my mind, already watered down. And so I think the Sedins will make it because it's already been watered down, and it's more of the Hall of Very Good or the Hall of Very, Very Good, as opposed to the Hall of Excellence. I mean, my benchmark, my threshold is that, you know, the point per game. And they're not point-per-game players. I mean, they're, you know, and that to me strikes, you know, stands out to me as not a negative on them, but just the reality of the situation. I think they make it in because their story is so unique, like you mentioned, and they won World Hockey Championships. Mm-hmm. They would have won an Olympic gold medal, if I'm not mistaken, at the 06 Olympics, the Turin Olympics. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, they would have won gold there. And they won Art Ross trophies, and they won Hart trophies, one of them, respectively each. And they had, you know, first team All-Stars and everything else. To me, I just don't know that they're the excellence that I would have in my Hall of Fame, but the Hockey Hall of Fame as it currently exists, I think probably inducts them as Hall of Famers. But when it comes to class, their first ballot, no doubt, Hockey Hall of Famers.
I'm also a little bit biased because these two twins have made me some money in hockey fantasy.
Sure.
I drafted both of them in my year 1 year.
Yeah.
And Roberto Luongo. And you remember the play against Calgary, the in-between tip, I believe, is April 10th, 2010, for the fourth goal. Henrik tips it between his legs.
You looked that up before the show. There's no way you knew that date beforehand.
Damn right, I looked it up.
Yeah.
But first of all, tremendous goal. But that goal won me my hockey fantasy that year, so a little biased.
A little soft spot for you there. Yeah. But, you know, terrific careers and all the respect in the world to both of them. And I like player. And, you know, oftentimes you hear people say, oh, he should retire. And I don't necessarily ever think a player should retire because this is their livelihood. And if somebody's willing to pay them to continue to do it, who am I to tell them that they have to give it up? But there still is something nice about seeing guys who play their entire career in one city and who, you know, hang it up at a when they're still, you know, tremendously talented. You know, Wayne Gretzky didn't hang on too long. He still was great. He just wasn't his excellence when he retired, from that season with the Rangers. And it's nice for the Canucks. I mean, you know, they were still under contract. They could have held out. They could have played another year, but they decided that it's time for sort of a clean break in the Canucks. And it'll be interesting to see what becomes of the Canucks organization, because it's been a bit of a tire fire for a lot of the Sedin's time there. And does this change things? Does this maybe set them on a new course where they can fully focus on a rebuild and, you know, really bottoming out as opposed to being this terrible tweener scenario that they've been trying to maintain for the last number of years?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Just a lot of reluctancy to move forward in Vancouver until they knew what these guys were going to do. And now that that decision has finally been made, Canucks management have a little bit more of a clear understanding of where they need to go and issues they need to address and the money now to potentially do it.
It'll be an emotional night tomorrow night in Vancouver when they play their final home game, and then Saturday night in Edmonton when they play their final NHL contest against the Oilers. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the Eastern Conference. The playoff races are heating up. A great battle for the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. Jim Cerny, managing editor of Sporting News Canada, joins us to talk about the NHL and the Eastern Conference. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Sean Assore, Drew Mindell in studio with you. Ezra Ginsberg in Montreal. Smoked meat coma is what the early diagnosis is.
It's a good coma.
Yeah, we expect that he'll be back for Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Silly question, but you've enjoyed a nice Schwartz's sandwich.
Come on. Come on. Oh. You're gonna come with me with that?
I've just been thinking about it since we were talking smoked meat at the beginning of. Oh, it's just the best.
Don't come at me with that.
You know, you can order them, and then they send them here, and then you just steam them.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that. When I'm in Montreal, I'll go for Schwartz's, but when I'm here in Winnipeg, it's the Illegal Curve sandwich.
It is a good
sandwich. I have my provincial loyalties. Jim Cerny is Sporting News, trying to get him on the air. He's going to join us coming up momentarily, talk about the playoff races, especially what's going on in that Eastern Conference. Great win. Huge win for the Florida Panthers last night to keep their hopes alive. They are now 4 points behind the Philadelphia Flyers. Flyers in action tomorrow against the Carolina Hurricanes. Boston is next up for Florida. So Florida is certainly going to have to earn it if they make it. And the Devils have the Toronto Maple Leafs. They just have to hope that the Devils and the Flyers lose. Devils have won 3 in a row. Mm-hmm. So they have to hope that the Devils and lose out, basically, and the Flyers lose out. And they have to win out. And it certainly helps with the NHL. A controversial call last night, let's say, in the Panthers-Predators game, where the Predators are 0.6 seconds away from tying it. They score. They think that they're going to clinch the Central Division by virtue of getting the game into overtime, only to have it overturned because of supposed goaltender interference. Was it goaltender interference in your mind?
I think that was goaltender interference.
Really?
Yeah. I do. The puck's under Roberto Luongo. Victor Arvidsson not only sticks the stick in between the legs, but he kind of does the can opener, and he rotates Luongo a good almost 180 degrees,
yeah,
and the puck squirts out. I mean, if you just kind of jab and, you know, there's a bunch of sticks poking in there and the puck is squirts free, it's much more debatable, but I think just because you are twisted a full 180 degrees and the puck squirts out that way, and then Philip Forsberg right there, Johnny on the doorstep. First of all, do you see the look on his face?
Yeah.
It's priceless.
Yeah. There was a lot of unhappy people. I mean, Carrie Underwood, we mentioned him, or her being unhappy with that result. It was definitely a bang-bang play, and I wonder in that situation, was it frozen enough? Did Luongo have it under him enough that the whistle was going to blow in that situation? The fact that the ref didn't blow the whistle, to me,
that's interesting.
you know, had it been frozen, or, you know, had the ref thought that it been frozen, the whistle would have gone, and then everything else would have been moot. But the fact that the ref didn't blow the whistle, to me, maybe makes me think that the puck was never frozen for long enough. It was a real difficult one, and I'm not sure if the NHL got it right or wrong. I'll defer to a guy like Ray Ferraro, who was asked that question on Twitter earlier tonight. I saw, and he said that the NHL got it right. He said he thought it was goaltender interference, that I guess it was underneath Luongo for long enough that the whistle should have gone, and the goal should not have counted, because the only way the puck was freed is because of Victor Arvidsson's actions in that instance. I'm not one to necessarily disagree with Ray Ferraro. He knows more hockey than I'll ever know. It was just a real bang-bang situation, and really, again, shows the perils of relying on video review.
And there was a call in the Bruins Lightning game.
Yes, they talked about it on TSN last night.
That went the opposite way. JT Miller in the crease, foot impeding Tuukka Rask to move over to where he needs to be, can't make the save, but the goal counts. So once again, even though this change has been made now that all these decisions are going back to a situation room where it's a couple referees and they're, you know, we're going to try to provide a little more stability and a little more consistency. And now once again, two games before the most important part of the year, and we're still having this debate.
Yeah, this debate it's
going to get ramped in the playoffs for sure.
Well, you remember last year between Anaheim and Edmonton, where, you know, Cam Talbot was, I mean, tackled, mauled, mugged by, I think it was Ryan Kessler or Ryan Getzlaff, was one of the Ryans.
Kessler sounds about right.
Yeah, and he couldn't get over, and this is when Anaheim made that stirring comeback. If you recall, late in the game, they came back from, you know, they were down 2 or 3 goals, and they came all the way back. You know, it's going to certainly ramp itself up in the playoffs. It always does, because it's taking a judgmental call, and it's trying to break it down frame by frame. And I don't like it. I understand why it exists, but, you know, it's almost an impossible call to get right. So you're putting the situation room and you're putting the officials on the ice in such a difficult position that oftentimes go with your first call, because they're on the ice. They know the situation. They watch it night in, night out. They know what's kosher and what's not kosher. So if they deem something to be acceptable, I don't know that video review really necessarily helps in determining that it's not acceptable.
It just adds a whole lot more questions to the process. And it's just, how many more times do we need to discuss this and, you know, break down goal after goal of, was this foot impeding this pad, or was this stick impeding this glove? I mean, like you talked about, it's so hard to break down and make methodical rules for judgment calls. And it's just, I don't see how this is going to get remedied anytime soon if these continue to take place.
It's true. Looking at the playoff situation, we have 5 teams that have clinched in the Eastern Conference. The Washington Capitals are going to win the Metropolitan Division for another season. They've got 103 points. The Pittsburgh Penguins and the Columbus Blue Jackets are tied with 96 points each. Penguins have the tiebreaker. The Penguins have actually clinched a playoff spot, while Columbus has not yet clinched a playoff spot. They obviously need a point in their final 2 games, where those two teams play each other tomorrow night. A victory for the Penguins, a regulation time victory for the Penguins, will clinch them second spot in the Metropolitan Division. Although I guess technically the New Jersey Devils could still catch them, but Columbus wouldn't be able to catch them because they would not have the tiebreaker. But it looks like Columbus is going to be playoff bound as well. The Devils need one win in their final 2 games as well. They have Toronto tomorrow night. They're looking to be one of those unexpected teams that make the playoffs. And the Philadelphia Flyers, again, they need one win as well to eliminate the Florida Panthers once and for all. The Boston Bruins and the Tampa Bay Lightning, they're tied at 110 points in the Atlantic Division, tied for first place after the Lightning shut out the Bruins 4-0 last night. Bruins still with a game in hand. They'll do that makeup game on Sunday, which conceivably could determine who wins that division, that game against the Florida Panthers. So who knows if it'll matter for the Panthers at that point in time or not. Hard to believe that the Flyers and the Devils are both going to lose their next 2 games. but conceivably they could, and it could come down to that Sunday evening contest. The Maple Leafs, they're sitting pretty. They don't have a home ice advantage, but they have 103 points. They can rest their players. They know that they're going to finish third in the Atlantic Division. So right now I'd suggest the Maple Leafs and the Capitals are two teams in very good positions in that they can focus on rest over the final few games of this regular season and not have to worry about anything else. Moving to the Western Conference, where it's a big game tonight in St. Louis. The Blackhawks are in St. Louis tonight, a game that the Blues certainly need if they want to be playoff bound. The Minnesota Wild are in Anaheim later on tonight as well. A huge game for the Anaheim Ducks. Mm-hmm. The Minnesota Wild basically locked into third place, barring something quite unforeseen, but any points in that game will clinch them that position. The Avalanche, the Blues can overtake the Avalanche with a victory tonight. This is their game in hand. So if they are able to get a victory tonight against the Chicago Blackhawks, they should beat the Blackhawks, they would overtake the Avs. The Avs would fall out of the playoffs right now, and the Ducks can actually leapfrog the LA Kings into third spot in the Pacific if they get a victory tonight over the Minnesota Wild. So lots still to be determined mm-hmm. in terms of playoff positioning in both the Eastern and Western conferences. St. Louis, they're battling for that last playoff spot, and the Florida Panthers need a bit of a Hail Mary, but the fact that they're in it at this point in time when they were so far out of it, they've had a great run just to get to this point in time and have their last three games hopefully be meaningful for the fans in South Florida.
How quiet has Claude Giroux's season been?
He's certainly in the conversation. It should be in the conversation for the Hart Trophy.
I am just so in awe of what this guy has been able to do this season, especially playing kind of a somewhat new position, getting moved to the wing. Sean Couturier moved into that top line, and he's third in the league in scoring with 97 points. Scored an absolutely just disgusting breakaway goal in overtime over the weekend. I mean, what this guy has been doing in Philly is just remarkable.
If Giroux gets the Flyers into the playoffs, and it looks like he will, I don't know how he's not one of the finalists for the Hart Trophy.
Should it be him and Hall kind of?
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason for Taylor Hall should be in that conversation if he gets the Devils in there. I mean, he had 4 points last night, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Taylor Hall has been far and away the best player for the New Jersey Devils this year. Oh. And, you know, for me, my personal one is Andrei Kopitar. I mean, this is a LA Kings team that doesn't have a lot of offensive firepower. Sure, they have Drew Doughty, and sure, they have Jonathan Quick, but you know, Kopitar certainly should be in that conversation. Nathan McKinnon, if he's able to get the Avs in there.
Especially with the Carter injury.
Yeah, well, losing Jeff Carter for
that's a huge loss to your offense. And Anze Kopitar just kind of put the team on
his
back.
Career year.
Gave a shot in the arm to his good buddy Dustin Brown, say, we need 20 out of you, friend. And
well, he's got 91 points. It's a career year for Anze Kopitar, a guy who a lot of people overlook necessarily or maybe discount some of his offensive output because they so focus on his, you know, defensive style of his game and how he's, you know, should be a Selke nominee, you know, each and every year. He might win the Selke this year. That wouldn't shock me given how responsible he is and how good he is in all three zones. But I mean, the way he's been playing, he's certainly up there for conversation as well. I mean, it's, you know, I know it's been talked about a little bit ad nauseum, but it's been a hell of a Hart Trophy race this year.
Oh, it's been
didn't
so
even
much
mention
fun.
Connor McDavid, which, you know, or Nikita Kucherov or Evgeny Malkin. Really can't go wrong with a lot of your selections this year.
No, I mean, tremendous season for the Hart Trophy race. And it just makes for a real fun home stretch here.
It absolutely does. When we come back, we'll talk about the Dallas Stars. They made history for all the wrong reasons. Their futility over the last weeks of the season make them a record holder that you don't want to hold the record of. You're listening to NHL This Week. We talk about the Dallas Stars up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I think the wind went out of our sails quite
well. We were trying to play that audio, but the computer was giving us a little bit of difficulty. Producer Rory is going to look at the hamster that operates that computer and make sure it gets back on the wheel and gets us the power necessary to play a video clip.
Maybe the computer is under a smoke meat coma right now.
Yeah, it might be the computer might have had too big of a lunch or something along those lines. In any event, that was supposed to be Ken Hitchcock talking about the disappointing end to the season for the Dallas Stars, a team that certainly looked like they were playoff bound at the 66-game mark. At the 66-game mark, they had 80 points, 37, 23, and 6. That is on pace for 99 points. At the time, it was the league's 10th best record. They were 1 point out of the third spot in the Central Division at that point in time. And the chances of the Dallas Stars making the playoffs after that point, that was March 5th, they were 80%. What the Stars have managed to accomplish here is tragically unprecedented in the salary cap era. Since the 2005-06 season, there have been 101 teams with 80 points or more after 66 games. Every single one of those teams has made the playoffs. That courtesy of Dom Lucician of TheAthletic.com. So the Dallas Stars looked like they were definitely going to be playoff-bound, dangerous playoff team. Instead, they're going to be enjoying some of South Texas's finest golf courses at the end of the season. They're on, I believe, a West Coast road trip to wrap up the season. A tremendously disappointing year for the Dallas Stars. Everyone talked about in the offseason about all the great moves they made. Mm-hmm. Alex Radulov, well, that move paid off. Mm-hmm. He's been terrific.
Great.
Mark Methot, they get him from the Vegas Golden Knights after they draft him in the expansion draft. He's had a down year. He's been injured. Ben Bishop, he was supposed to be their savior in net. Been injury prone.
Shocker.
Martin Hansel, injury prone, back surgery.
Yeah.
You know, this Dallas Stars team has to be one of the biggest disappointments this season in the NHL.
It's funny, TSN released their predictions from the beginning of the year today.
Oh, did they? I missed
and
that.
And they had Dallas, it's either today or yesterday, I saw
sure.
it today.
Nice of them. I like when they do that, to remind people of, hey, you know, we had some bad calls
hey,
as well.
Remember your terrible prediction five yeah. months ago?
Well, I'll give Ezzy credit. He always talks about his Edmonton Oilers winning the Stanley Cup prediction, and that has been proven to be a pretty lousy one as well.
I also predicted that this
I
year.
Think I may have as well. I just don't talk about it nearly as much.
But they were projected to be the top team out of the Central.
Sure.
And just you look at what they've not been able to do this year, and I think it just comes down to a lack of defensive depth and secondary scoring, which I know is a lot of issues.
Yeah.
But
it's funny though. This Dallas Stars team under Lindy Ruff was horrendous defensively, mm-hmm. but they were very skilled offensively. You know, they were an offensive dynamo. Every game was 6-5. It was 1980s hockey. They couldn't keep anything out of their net. Mm-hmm. Lindy Ruff's contract isn't renewed, and I'm not saying his contract should have been because his time had passed in Dallas. Mm-hmm. They bring back Ken Hitchcock, and we know that Hitchcock is defense first, and they bought into it. The Dallas Stars have the 10th fewest goals against this season. The problem is now offense. The 11th worst offensive numbers in the NHL, only 2.78 goals per game. That's not enough to get it done. It's a role reversal. They have the defense buy-in. They have what you need on the back end. But offensively, after that top line, there's nothing there. And that's been their bugaboo all season long. You talked about it just then. Secondary scoring.
Yeah, Tyler Seguin, 77 points. Jamie Benn, 74 points. Alexander Radulov, 68 points. And then John Klingberg, their all-star stud Swedish defenseman, 65 points. And then Mattias Janmark, 34 points. Yeah. So it's a top-heavy line, a very offensively potent top-heavy line. Do you see the comeback against San Jose last night?
Sure. Well,
Jamie Benn looked as uninterested in a hat-trick game winner.
Well, what's he supposed to do? Well, I'm glad he's not celebrating that. But, I mean, of course that they can come back against any team in the league because they have Ben and Seguin
and
Radulov.
It just looked like a guy who was really wearing where his team was real hard. And that's what you want to see from your captain after an underachieving season. But they got to – it'll be interesting to talk to Mike Hajka just to talk about kind of which forwards they'll really need to take that next step moving forward and where they'll be looking for potentially in a draft and,
yeah.
you know, the goaltending situation, a lot of blame being put on Ben Bishop, and Kari Lehtinen, but they've been decent. They've gotten serviceable goaltending out of both these guys. Ben Bishop can't stay healthy, but...
Yeah, well, they probably shouldn't. I mean, it's going to prove to be a bad contract, but, I mean, the numbers aren't bad. They've below average save percentages, but, I mean, compared to what they were last year...
Yeah.
I mean, you know, 2.49 goals against average, 2.58 goals against average, respectively. Nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Save percentage could be a little higher, 916 and 911, respectively, but the goaltending is upgraded from what was a gong show in goal last year for the Dallas Stars. You know, it's a flawed roster. And you mentioned Mike Hajka. He covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. He's going to join us next segment. You know, he talks about it, you know, that this was a team that probably needed to do something at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And when they didn't do something, when they didn't shore up that secondary scoring, or they didn't, you know, just add pieces to the roster, it maybe sent a message to the roster that we don't believe in you. Maybe it sent a message to the roster that, you know, when you only have a one line, when you're a one line team and that one line begins to struggle and the shooting percentage cratered down to the worst in the entire NHL, mm-hmm. their shooting percentage has been 31st in the NHL over the last 6 weeks, I believe. You know, when everybody starts to slump and you don't have enough guys who can try and pick up the slack, this is what happens.
Yeah, it's a clear example of what depth can, how it can hinder your success. We've been talking about this season here in Winnipeg is what depth can do for an organization. Well, conversely, in Dallas, we're seeing what it can do with a lack thereof. And it's going to be a real interesting offseason. I'm excited to see kind of what moves are made. Kind of flying under the radar, Ezzy, is...
My name's Drew.
Pardon me, Drew.
Yeah, you're basically fired after that.
It's the smoke meat again.
Yeah.
Is Tyler Seguin needs a contract following next year?
So you give him a contract. He's Tyler Seguin.
But what are they going to need to throw his way, and how does that affect some of the other acquisitions moving forward? Or does it?
It doesn't. You get a contract for Tyler Seguin. Assuming he wants to re-sign there, and... I don't know why you wouldn't want to re-sign there. He's Tyler Seguin. He's going to be 27 years old when that contract's up. You give him, you know, his 7 or 8 years or whatever it is. I mean, he's one of the premier goal scorers in the league. You know, the Spezza contract will be off your books at that point in time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not a big difficulty. You only have another year with Hanzel at that point. So you just give Seguin, you say fill in the number, and you move on. I mean,
give him whatever he wants. Make it $5.7 million now.
Yeah, well, he's a bargain at that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
but
he's a 40-goal scorer. He's almost a point-a-game player. I mean, you give him $8 million because he's going to get $8 million, maybe more, on the open market.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, life in Dallas, playing hockey in Dallas isn't a bad situation. You wouldn't think that there'd be a problem there in terms of lifestyle.
No, not at all. Apparently he's beloved within the community. Him and Jamie Benn have really embraced the kind of Dallas community, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. You know what's interesting with me when we look at the Stars this year, especially this year?
Okay.
Well, no, actually last year as well. Up until last year, Tyler Seguin was a Jet killer, right? The guy would score at least once every game against the Jets, often multiple point games. That has kind of flipped now. We, the Jets, have a guy who owns the Dallas Stars in Patrick Laine.
Well, the Jets dominated the Stars this year. And, but, I mean, every game, I think one of the games was competitive, and that was the most recent one at Bell MTS Place. Maybe it was a couple Fridays ago, whatever exactly it was. That was the most competitive of all the games. Other than that, the Jets dominated the Dallas Stars this season. It certainly was a role reversal, and Patrick Laine's numbers against the Stars are outrageous.
Yeah, and Jamie Benn, we got Laine'd.
I mean, he's not wrong.
No,
it's certainly not wrong. It's just, you know, what the Jets did to the Stars this year was impressive. I mean, not if you're a Dallas Stars fan, of course, but this Dallas Stars team, they're a bit at a crossroads in that Jim Nill, general manager, has to decide, one, is Ken Hitchcock the right man behind the bench again next season? Because
mm-hmm.
he's basically on a year-to-year sort of coaching situation, because he can become a consultant in the organization basically at any point in time. Mm-hmm. Is he the right man for behind the bench? And then how do you fix all the flaws in your roster? You know, because there's flaws there. I mean, you can't go into next year being a one-line team like the Dallas Stars are, and, you know, there's certainly questions that are going to exist around the health of Martin Hanzel after having back surgery. Generally speaking, when you're 31, 32 years old and you have back surgery, you don't necessarily bounce back at 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what happens with Hanzel? You know, Jason Spezza, I mean, a horrendous season. I mean, he's got 8 goals on the year and 18 assists. He's making $7.5 million. Well, you're stuck with the contract.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. But, you know, how do you extricate yourself from that, or how do you maybe resuscitate a bit of Jason Spezza to make that not the worst contract in the entire NHL? But I mean, there's a difficult offseason for Jim Neal in Dallas, and he has to make some tough decisions, because he has, you know, he won the offseason last year, but that goes to show you just how much it's worth when you win the offseason, but your team, you know, has a historic defeat and a historic meltdown when it comes to the regular season.
Yeah, I just look at the month of March and that six-game that six-game road trip, you know, the quote-unquote road trip through hell that they're calling it now, and just how demoralizing that must have been for them halfway, you know, going through that without a win, and then Winnipeg beating them 5-2, then losing 4-2, pardon me, and then losing in Washington, and just saying essentially goodbye to playoff hockey after that. Mm-hmm. It's a tough road down in Dallas right now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that offseason plays out. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News, get some on-the-ground information as to where the Stars need to go from here in this upcoming offseason. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor with you in studios here at TSN 1290 on beautiful Pembina Highway. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Dallas Morning News, he's their Dallas Stars correspondent. He's a good friend of our program. His name is Mike Hyka. Mike, good morning. Good morning. Good evening, rather. And welcome to the program.
Feels like morning, doesn't it?
You know what? Sometimes it does. Sometimes it feels like a never-ending morning, just a constant loop of AM hours. Mike, we appreciate your time this evening. Thanks for joining us to talk about the Stars. You know, we were talking about them last segment, Mike, and just an epic collapse for the Stars from game 66 on, where really it seemed like they were certainly bound for a playoff spot. They were a top 10 team in the entire NHL, and then the bottom just absolutely fell out on them. You know, looking back now, were there troubling signs for this team that maybe they weren't as good as their record indicated?
No, I don't think so. I think the troubling signs were their record probably should have been better because of the softness of the schedule early on. And the bad things that happened is, you know, they were just getting used to Ken Hitchcock. And this really is a huge transition from what Lindy Ruff wanted to do, which is go, 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 to what Ken Hitchcock wants to do, which is attack with positioning and intelligence and, you know, just thinking about where you are before you go. And so that was a transition for, let's say, the first 20 games, and then they came out of that at, you know, 8-4, whatever it was, at a time when it really would have been nice if they would have taken advantage of the schedule and you know, gotten themselves up 7-8 points on 500 and hadn't, you know, kind of meandered around. And then they hit their stride in the middle of the season. They were really good. And that was even with Mathot being out and Hanzel coming in and out of the lineup. They were good. And you know, with Bishop and Lettinen together, the goaltending was so much better than it's been in the past 4 or 5 years. So all of that, they earned. They really did. They earned their spot to be in one of the wild card positions after 66 games or whatever it was. And then Hanzel gets hurt and is out for good. Bishop gets hurt, and they have to rely only on Lettinen and I think we saw last night with Mike McKenna playing well that maybe Ken Hitchcock made a mistake by not at least trusting Mike McKenna to take a few of those minutes, because you could have, in my opinion, gotten a much better Kari Lettinen if you just would have given him a couple games off in there. So that was a big part of the problem. And then they just really blew a lot of games. And that's, I think that's the, you know, lasting impression of this whole thing, is that they're, you know, many of their best players were there and they blew games. They just collapsed. They were up 2-0 on Boston and lost 3-2 in regulation. They went into Montreal, lost that game. It was the only game in a stretch of nine that Montreal won. They lost in Ottawa when Ottawa was struggling. They lost to Vancouver, although Vancouver's playing better. But they just left points all over the place. And I get that Ben Bishop's an important part. I get that Martin Hansel's an important part. I get that Mark Mathot's an important part. But you should be able to overcome that and at least play 500 hockey and keep your head above water until, you know, a couple of guys get healthy or your team just, you know, some of the kids maybe start taking some of the minutes. Anyway, so that's a long way of saying it's a lot of different things.
Mike, I'm glad you brought up Mike McKenna. I was watching the game yesterday, and is this he looked quite tremendous in relief of Kari Lehtinen. Is this a guy who maybe could you expect to see him in the last couple games of the season and could potentially play his way into a more secure backup role?
I think we could see him. He's 35 years old, 34, about to turn 35. So I just don't think it's in the cards for him. He is a pretty much an AHL lifer. He's very good in the AHL. I think, and I've got second thoughts on this one too, but I think he'll go back to the Texas Stars and probably take the playoff minutes away from Landon Beau, who's 22. And I don't know that that's the best plan, but McKenna was a better goalie when they were down there. And I think they like him, and you know he's a veteran. He's 34, 35 years old. So I don't think he can play his way into the backup position for next season. But that's a huge question because Lehtinen's contract is up. I don't know if Landon Beau is ready. If he plays in the playoffs and if they do well down there at 22, he could step up and at least fight for the position in camp with maybe a free agent veteran. But they may have to go out and find somebody, especially if Ben Bishop is injury prone. And Ben Bishop tells you he's not injury prone, that he's just had fluke accidents like Dan Hamhuis falling on his knee. But it seems like every year or every other year at this time of year, he has an injury. And so if you've got that goalie, then your backup darn well better be a guy who can eat up 8 or 10 games at a time.
Mike Hajka is our guest on NHL this week. Mike covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Mike, every coach has their blind spots, and I think most coaches would tell you that they prefer veterans to rookies. Does Kent Hitchcock have too much of a reliance on his veteran players and maybe erred in not giving some of his younger players more of an opportunity?
Yes, I think so. Now, you know, again, we can get into this argument with Hitch, and he's, you know, third winningest coach of all time, and he's relied on veterans forever, and the way he coaches is a very detailed approach, meaning you kind of need to know where you are in the ice. You kind of need to know where your teammates are in the ice. He said one of the biggest problems they had during that slump is that some teammates are trying to cover too hard for other teammates, and that just messes everything up. So I understand why he likes the veterans so much, but, I mean, like, I don't know why you wouldn't play Julius Honka more. I don't know why you wouldn't play Jason Dickinson more. I mean, these are first-round draft picks. These are, you know, Julius Honka's 22. He's got 191 games in the AHL. He's right. I know that you know, Jim Nill likes to say overripe. He's right. Jason Dickinson is ready to go. He's ready to take some minutes. And then when you look at teams like Boston or Pittsburgh, when they've been racked with injuries, 22-year-olds come in and play just fine. And so, you know, sometimes a coach has to be pressed into that. And I do think Hitch is that guy. He would have to be pressed into a situation where he'd have to trust him, just like he had to trust McKenna last night. And sometimes those situations work out great. I think it is it's a blind spot and it is a problem. And, you know, I think he really wanted somebody added at the trade deadline. And you know, that just seems to be, I don't know if it's a miscommunication or the GM just didn't want to give up what the price was. But I really think that Hitch felt that he thought he was getting a veteran or two at the trade deadline and didn't get them.
Mike, you mentioned the trade deadline, and we were talking about that in the previous segment. And you know, I speculated that maybe the locker room saw that as a vote of non-confidence in them, in that Jim Nill stood pat. And I'm not talking about blowing things up and bringing in, you know, necessarily a superstar or the biggest available player on the rental market, but just something to supplement the offense, because we knew how top heavy this was. You know, do you think that maybe in hindsight, if you injected him with truth serum, Jim Nill would say, yeah, I erred in not doing anything?
I would hope he would say that with the results he got. You know, I hate to say that the players reacted negatively, but I will say that other teams have reacted positively. Columbus, I think when they got those, you know, the cavalry came at the trade deadline, it really gave them a boost of optimism. I think San Jose, when they got Evander Kane, it really gave them a boost of optimism. LA, I think, has helped some, although they're kind of been up and down. But point being is, I don't think the players would say, oh, crud, but I do would, you know, again, if you could go back and rewind this thing and say you got a Patrick Maroon or Michael Grabner, you know, what would that have done? You know, how would that have affected Ken Hitchcock's use of Jason Spezza? Because if you get a Grabner who's a two-way player and you've got a Matthias Janmark who's a two-way player, can you then put Jason Spezza on the second line and he'll be protected because Hitch, I think, thinks he's too weak defensively. But, okay, now it's Grabner, Janmark, and Spezza. That's a second line that can be pretty defensively responsible. Now you can slide Foxa and Pitlick and Roussel or whoever. Or if you wanted to put Maroon, you know, in a position and move Radulov off that top line, you could have tried something like that. So, I mean, they're just, like, in your mind as a fan, you're going, like, well, I could have done this, and I could have done that, and I could, you know, so it's, all those things are in your head, and I do think if you look back, and I think Jim Nill will look back and say, yeah, maybe I messed that one up. Maybe I should have gone for whatever the price was. And I don't know that they could have gotten Kane. I mean, that would have been too much, and they really were up against the cap. But I think both Maroon and Grabner were, you know, either or, were doable deals that the Devils picked up.
Mike, I was watching the game versus the Sharks, and Jamie Benn scores an absolutely filthy goal for the hat trick. But we're so used to seeing such a fiery, riled up Jamie Benn, a proud guy. You know, he wears the C, and there was just very little emotion. Is this a guy who's just wearing this season just tremendously with you know, just with the disappointment that the team has suffered?
Yes, and it's a really interesting question to dig into. Where is Jamie Benn in his development and in his career? And you know, a lot of people down here will say, what's the window? You know, because it sure looks like if you gave Ben Bishop a six-year contract and Alexander Radulov a five-year contract, you know, you're starting to say, oh, maybe the window's right now. And so, you know, Bishop is 31. Radulov, I think, is going to be 32. Ben's 28. Sagan's going to have to get his deal done. So you're like, the window is right now. You've kind of sent that message not only to the fans but to the players. And so the expectation for this season was incredibly high. So then when we talked to them the other day after they, you know, they got eliminated from the playoffs, this will be 7 years in nine seasons for Jamie Benn that he's missed the playoffs. He has 19 playoff games in nine seasons. And that's just shocking to me. So, you know, combine that emotional, you know, burden to what happened this year to he plays a physical game. And we saw with Brendan Morrow, sometimes guys who play a physical game start to wear down a little bit earlier. And he's only 28, and you don't want to say that, you know, he's completely wearing down. But, you know, you've got both physical and mental stresses that are on your $9.5 million player, and that's got to be a concern.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. We always appreciate your time, and thank you for joining us. You know, fill in this blank for me. Next season, or at the start of next season, Ken Hitchcock is fulfilling what role with the Dallas Stars?
That is a great question, and I don't have the answer because I don't know what the process is for making that decision. I think Tom Gilardi has a role in it. I think, you know, Jim Nill has a huge role in it. I think Ken Hitchcock might have a huge role in it. So they're going to have to assess everything. It's my opinion that Jim Nill will be here next year and Jim Nill will be running the show. And so then if all parties believe that this is just a fluke and the injuries hurt and it took him a while to learn Hitch's system, then Ken Hitchcock's a coach. But if all parties don't agree with that, and let's say a Joel Quenneville or an Alain Vigneault get fired, does that change the landscape? Because the situation is such that they don't have to do anything. You know, they just sit there and say, you know, we're gonna sit and wait on this, and then all of a sudden Joel Quenneville's available. Well, boom, now Ken Hitchcock's your consultant and Joel Quenneville's your coach, I think. You know, I think that's a possibility. But at the same point in time, I have no idea. I can't read the guys who are making the decisions on all of this just yet, because they're very much focused on, we'll do this later. And, you know, even in, you know, like a lot of times you can just talk to people and behind the scenes, they're very much focused on, we'll do this later. Jamie said it the other day. Hitch has said it. You know, we're going to focus on these games. Jim Nell, we're going to focus on these games. We have plenty of time to make whatever decisions, you know, that are in the office. They don't even want to think about it, I think, let alone talk about it. So it's way up in the air, if you ask me. Pretty much any scenario you want to come up with is at least within the realm of possibility after a season like this.
Mike Hajka covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Mike, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Take care, Mike. When we come back, we got one final segment. Talk a little bit about the Jets ahead of their home contest against the Calgary Flames tomorrow evening. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Derek Forsberg tying it up with less than a second to play. But hold on, lots of bodies around Roberto Luongo. So, of course, the NHL taking a look for potential goalie interference. Keith Yandle and Victor Arvidsson battling in the crease. Forsberg slips by for the goal. He's awaiting confirmation, but the call, no goal.
Goaltender interference. Wow. I can't believe this one. Look at Lavi.
Some unhappy members of the Nashville Predators. We talked about that controversy earlier on in the program. That was their game-tying goal being waved off. Means that they do not clinch the Central Division. The Jets conceivably still have a chance at being first overall in the Central Division. They'd have to win out. They'd have to have Nashville lose out in regulation as well. Welcome back to the program. One final segment on this Wednesday evening. Stay tuned after we're done. Blue Jays baseball live, joined in progress, coming up right after we're off air. The Jays down 3-1 to the White Sox in the top of the sixth inning right now. The White Sox threatening with runners on first and third. The Jays have had some great late inning comebacks so far this season. Looks like they're going to need another one as they're down 3-1 to the White Sox in the sixth inning, but this is, yeah, there you go. How about that? An inning-ending double play for the Jays to get out of trouble. So bottom of the sixth in Toronto, the Jays down to the White Sox. Looking at the out-of-town scoreboard in the NHL, a riveting battle, and the sarcasm is intended. The Senators up 3-1 in Buffalo halfway through the second period. If God help you if you paid anything or any good money for that game, because that's a real stinker. And then in St. Louis, a key matchup for the St. Louis Blues. After 20 minutes, the Blues and the Blackhawks tied at one goal apiece. Andreas Martinsson for the Blackhawks, Robert Bortuzzo for the Blues. The Blues need that victory badly. Still to come tonight, the Wild at the Ducks, a game that the Ducks certainly need. Should make mention that this final segment is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. All this week at Rumors, Shane Mouse in town. He's just playing to great reviews so far. He's a fan favorite. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. And, of course, a list of all the upcoming comedians also available, so you can get your hands on that. Sean, Jets and the Flames tomorrow night, and then the Jets and the Flames to wrap up the regular season. Pardon me, the Jets and the Blackhawks to wrap up the regular season on Saturday. Anything you're looking for in the next two games in particular, or just healthy, maybe rest some guys as much as you can and then get everything going for next week? That's what everybody's waiting for, the first round playoffs expected to begin here in Winnipeg either Wednesday or Thursday of next week.
The two H's, health and habits. You want to see the Jets playing the way that they've played to get them to where they're getting into the playoffs. That fast, physical, in-your-face, pace-driving, you know, none of these backhand saucer passes through the middle of the ice that have started to creep their way into their game. And it's tough to stay focused during these final stretches. It almost has somewhat of a preseason feel, does it not?
Well, you're playing against opponents who have nothing to play for. I mean, you see the game in Ottawa, the game in Montreal, you see they jump out and they dominate for the first 10 minutes or 15 minutes, and they have a 3-0 lead. And then, I mean, it's hard to keep your intensity up in those contests because they're meaningless. So I understand why Ottawa was able to come back in that game and why Montreal was able to come back in that game. And I know the goals against average for the Jets has not been very good as of late. Mm-hmm. With the exception of the game in Toronto, where they played the way that Paul Maurice wants to see them playing. And that's why I'm not overwhelmingly concerned right now.
No.
Because when the game, really the only game that's mattered on this road trip, or the only game the Jets, I think, really cared about on this road trip was that game in Toronto, because it's the national spotlight. It has the lingering taste of negativity from the season opener where they were blown out. They went and played in Toronto the way they should play.
All the outside rhetoric, potential Canadian Cup final.
Exactly.
All these. You think Sammy Niku gets a home game?
Yeah, why not? I mean, I would. I'd look at resting some of your veterans again. I mean, I'd look at resting probably not Trouba. You got Morrissey. He got the rest last night. I'd give him some more rest. He's played a lot of hockey. Blocked a lot of shots. Played some tough minutes. Why not? I mean, I'd give his guys as much rest as you possibly can. I'd even rest some of them on Saturday if you needed to. Definitely tomorrow, maybe Saturday. I can understand if you go with your full strength, the full strength of your lineup, just to make sure you have, you know, what you want to start the playoffs. But I mean, you're going to have some practice time. You know, they're going to, you know, be done Saturday night, and there's, you know, first round isn't going to begin till Wednesday or Thursday. So you can have some decent skates in there on Monday or Tuesday. But I want guys healthy. I want guys rested more than anything.
How about the flow?
Oh, man, as somebody who, this was once a great society of hair. This society is, you know, the earth has been salted a little bit when it comes to my hairstyle, but I totally can appreciate Sammy Niku's hair,
because
I'm jealous.
Comes out with the samurai look, the ponytail, long hair. Hey, Sammy, the samurai.
You think you got a nickname there? Samurai Niku?
I think I smell a nickname. The samurai.
I'm not sure that it's going to catch on, but
probably not.
All the power to you. Good luck with that. That's it for the Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to our guest, Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News, and George Johnson, who covers the Calgary Flames. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine Winnipeg businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Great job by producer Rory McGoran behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For Sean Assor, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck, and remind you to stay tuned for Blue Jays baseball here on TSN Radio 1290.
As long as you said yeah, the team will be all right.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.